just feel it. Yeah, you talk to him. Shout out to the Dadcast Nation. Yo, see, this is the perspective of a dad. Cast it to whomever's interested. Come take this ride with your boy, and I promise to keep it interesting. I'm invested in learning life's lessons so we can grow together. I know the weather be switching up on you, but listen up. It's just life's journeys. This would turn me into a teacher, a father, a husband, a preacher. And I'm trying to reach the top, a writer, an author, an actor, and a director. So when you see the world through my eyes, it's like a reflector of all of that. And I'm all of that, but it's much more to do. See, life is just your movie, and your role is yours to choose. We only get one life to live, and I live my life with prayer. This the Dadcast Podcast, so hit that like and share. Hit that like and share.
Hey folks, welcome to the Dadcast Podcast. I'm your host, Lavelle Lamonier, and it's a pleasure to bring another exciting episode to you today. Hey, before we get started, I'd like to show some love to our great sponsors for helping us to bring this sixth season to life. We definitely couldn't do this broadcast and this episode without you. I'd also like to thank my lovely wife, Dr. Gabrielle Lamonier, for helping to inspire this podcast. She's the co-creator of the podcast and helps me quite a bit with content creation. So I appreciate her help for that. This sixth season, let me tell you, is shaping up to be a phenomenal one. We've got some great guests that we've already recorded that you may have seen some of them already. And then we've got a few more that we're going to show this season. And we're talking about a range of topics that center on men's mental health. And I didn't necessarily intend for this season to go this way, but as it shaped up with the guests that we have, the conversations just, they just went toward mental health. And so that is seems to be the theme for this season. And so we're going to follow that theme. And today's guest is certainly qualified to help us on the subject. Our guest today is a cancer survivor and a mental health clinician. Darryl Barrett Jr. is a dedicated mental health professional with a robust background in providing comprehensive counseling services and trauma-informed care. Now, his passion lies in practicing healing through psychotherapy, and he brings a wealth of experience to the field. Currently, he serves as a qualified mental health clinician in Houston, Texas, where he conducts individual and family counseling services for children aged 5 and older, and he focuses on mental health and well-being. He is adept at providing trauma-informed care, ensuring a sensitive and effective approach to healing. And previously, prior to this current position, Darryl held the role of counselor at Gateway Foundation Corrections Facility in Humble, Texas, where he conducted group and individual counseling sessions with probationers using evidence-based cognitive behavioral intervention for substance abusers and criminal conduct. In his role as a mental health clinician, at the University of Texas Medical Branch, Darryl interviewed, evaluated, and diagnosed patients with mental health needs. He provided individual and group psychotherapy and crisis intervention and developed, implemented, and reviewed individual treatment plans. Now, Darryl holds a master's degree in clinical mental health counseling from the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, and he also has an additional master's degree in psychology. His thesis focused on emotional intelligence, improving leadership skills. All right, Dadcast Nation, help me welcome to the show, Mr. Darryl Barrett Jr. Hello, sir, how are you?
Good, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you on this episode. Look forward to the conversation. And I want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to be a guest on the show. Hopefully we can shed some light on some important topics today. I just want to start off by asking you to give our audience a little information about your journey to the mental health field. How did you get into this field, and what has that process been like for you?
For me, how I got into the field was when I was diagnosed with cancer. After being diagnosed with cancer, I kind of sat back and did a lot of soul searching within myself, and also like what I'm going to do as far as my future. And I kind of wanted to put myself in a situation where I can help others, and mental health was one of the ways that I feel that I can be a better suit for people while I'm still here on this earth. So, I was focusing on my mental health at the time. I was going through a lot of things, just being diagnosed with cancer. Spending time with my family, my wife, my kids, seeing how that affect them is, me having cancer, mentally as well. And just looking at, when you start looking at yourself as a race and gender as a black male, start looking at how our mental health is being neglected a lot by ourselves and society as a whole. And wanted to be in a better situation where I can at least try while I'm here to help kill those stigmas of mental health in the black community and see how I can basically continue to keep that conversation of black mental health going. So, also before I started doing mental health, I was when I was diagnosed, I was actually working with Union Pacific Railroad, and I was told a union office there with through smart transportation, and a lot of our issues that we had were mental health issues as far as lack of sleep apnea. We had a lot of veterans, so a lot of veterans that were still suffering from PTSD. I saw a lot of mental health as far as that, as far as going through the workspace as well.
You mentioned something that I think is real important for our audience to just understand. A diagnosis with cancer, you're a relatively young man. You mentioned you have your wife and your family. I'm assuming that when you get a diagnosis like that, that there are, all kinds of thoughts that rush through your mind. And you mentioned, dealing with your own mental health. As a man with a family, responsibilities, can you take us a little bit into what you were thinking about? What challenges were you facing mentally when you got that diagnosis? And I'm asking the question because I'm certain that there are a lot of men out here who get different health diagnoses, and face different challenges in life that it puts a strain on their mental health. And so I'd like to know, what you dealt with and how did you deal with it?
So, excuse me. When I was initially diagnosed, I remember sitting in the doctor's office, and he was like, looked at my chart, and he was like, man, like you have cancer, and I'm like, really, like, wow. So I would say the first thought was denial, right? Not denying that I had cancer, but denying that how serious it was. I had stage three cancer. Denying the fact that this was something that I possibly could not recover from. And for me, having previous other health conditions, so when I was at 10, when I was born with a BSD heart murmur. So I had a hole in my heart the size of a nickel. At the age of 10, I had open heart surgery, and they went ahead and closed that up. So my mind was like, I'm looking at it at that standpoint that came into play. I thought, okay, well, I bounced that for that. So, this is nothing. When it was actually something totally different. We're talking about a physical defect versus something that's viral and, disease-based. But denial was the first thing that came to mind. Like, okay, cool, but it didn't really hit me and dawn on me until that night when I came home. And I'm like, yeah, this is way serious than what I'm perceiving it to be. And I think once I got out that denial stage, I kind of like it. I'm not gonna say it made it easier to process, but it still was challenging. When I came in and went to my PCP, my primary care physician, once I got diagnosed, I was really down, depressed, and he knew I was down and depressed. And it's good to have doctors that's in your corner and that is there for you. And he was like, "Look, man." He referred me to a counselor, to a mental health counselor, and he suggested that I get help going through this process. So, yeah, I had a lot of things going through my mind. Dying, it's a possibility I can die. Never had chemo before, so this is a new experience for me. My body going to have different toxins coming through it. What's going to happen with my kids? What's going to happen with my family if it does pass away? Luckily, I'm in a good situation. I was in a situation at that time where I have, and I still do, right? But having like, but preparing for this day, because at the time I was working in a high risk job where, you know, me coming home might not be an option one day. I could die on the job, so I had life insurance, things like that being taken care of. But still, your presence is needed. As much money as you have, you can have all the money in the world, but your family needs you as a presence there. They need your presence there. So a lot of things were going through my mind.
Okay. And if you don't mind, I want to dig a little bit into the depression part of it because that's going to segue into our discussion. Depression is a topic, in my opinion, especially among men, that we don't have an outlet many times to discuss it. We can suffer from depression, but a lot of times, at least for myself and others that I know, we deal with depression internally. Do you think that's something that's wise to do, or did you find that being able to talk to a professional was helpful? And did your depression also, I would like to know, did it ever get you in moments of anger? And how did you deal with that if it did?
Yeah, those are real good questions. As far as depression, right? You know, you got different forms of depression, right? You got major depressive disorder, you got mood disabilities, mood disorders, bipolar, things like that. I would say we have to be comfortable and get in the habit of being able to express ourselves more. I'm not gonna say an individual can't deal with depression. I most definitely think an individual can deal with depression depending on the magnitude of the depression. We're talking about bipolar, major depression disorder. I most definitely recommend you getting some help. Even with mood disorders, most definitely gets you some help. And even if you don't even have mental health issues as far as depression and you just need to talk, get help. You know, help can go in many forms. It doesn't always have to be in the sense of being bad, right? You can get help. You know, just people to listen to you when you have something good to talk about and discuss. But I most definitely think, you know, when it comes to depression, one of the biggest things that help is psychotherapy, which is basically talk therapy, just talk, being able to talk. You know, we are one of a race that we have very strong stigmas between, you know, when it comes to medication and getting treated. And through history, we have a right to feel that way. We got Tuskegee experiments and things like that going on. So yeah, have a very, very valid these way. This definitely, I guess, for I also recommend, you know, if you can, this day, I didn't think no one would be able to understand me as through this. Things I had to get around stigma, which is still a stigma in a sense because, you know, a lot of therapists from my culture and our standpoint. So it's very, very important if you are looking for someone, look for someone that look like us. Do you have a lot of good Black psychiatrists? Mental health professionals and things of that sort. So they have even a lot of good, you know, you can find good groups that specialize in men's depression. What are we facing? Religious practices, you know, certain, you know, you can go to church. Certain churches have good groups. You have men group, drug rehab groups in some of these churches, and even in mosque or any other religious practice. So most definitely, it's very, very important to be able to talk about it, but also have a safe space to be able to be yourself and express yourself.
Right. Yeah, those are some good resources, obviously, to utilize. I know that myself, In the past, when I've dealt with depression, my mood would change quite a bit. And sometimes that mood would result in anger. Not necessarily, you know, I didn't want to commit any physical violence to anyone. I mean, sometimes I felt like I wanted to. But I'm sure there are a lot of men who sometimes don't even understand depression. They just fall into it. And then they fall back to a common something that's comfortable, which may be anger. And they lash out at people, usually those that are closest to them. And so I'm just wondering, you know, what kind of methods do you think are useful and helpful in dealing with that anger when it results from that depression?
And, you know, that's one of the questions that you asked me earlier. And so, yes, I had a lot of anger. But I would say based on life experiences itself created a lot of anger as well. Going through childhood trauma, things like that, going through grief and loss, that can create anger. Being able, you know, going through what I went through as far as cancer and these type of issues, it created a lot of anger. On top of with me, as far as my anger being injected, taking steroids as part of my treatment also increased my anger as well. But I think anger is a sign of depression. And when it comes to that, we have to really have a good outlet, good coping skills, being able to work through those depression, that anger, recognizing that we do have anger. And, you know, find a way out, right? Go fishing, do something that's coping where you can separate yourself at times to things that might be triggering your anger. I think one of the most important things is understanding what is creating anger, what situations create a situation that's creating anger. Okay, if this situation is creating anger, okay, what are we doing? What is our behavior? What are our triggers like? What are we going to do to ensure that we get ahead of our anger? I think one of the biggest thing is backtracking and understanding why certain situations are triggering us. A lot of times, once we get down to the bottom of those underlying issues, we can, you know, it'll help towards addressing anger a little bit easier, because I think a lot of times when we are angry, we're like, man, why do I get angry so mad when this happened? But then when we start going back and peeling back those layers, you can find out, okay, well, bam, here you go, right here. I need to start addressing this. It could be childhood trauma that I'm still addressing that I haven't really fully addressed. Or it could be, in my instance, right, it could be a childhood trauma or trauma that I experienced in the past, along with, you know, experiencing a medical condition. So it can be a number of reasons why that our anger is increasing. But, you know, we have to be aware of our anger, also looking at our level and our anger. What are we thinking about? Are we thinking about hurting ourselves? You know, because suicide is real, and especially into the Black community and Black men, suicide is real. Those thoughts are real, ideations. But that's important to understand as far as that. Also, our aggression, right? Am I getting so mad that I want to hurt somebody? Am I hurting people in my household by being physically, verbally violent or abusive? So we have to really look at it from not just one area, but in all areas, and be able to fix it from that. So, you know, they have anger management support groups that you can just Google around in your community. You can even go look at YouTube videos. They have a lot of good YouTube videos that talks about ways to express anger, ways to address anger. A lot of our anger is stemming back from, again, childhood issues and concerns. So being able to work towards that can actually help with addressing anger.
Okay, yeah, those are some good points. Yeah, I've found that just having my wife says I don't really have a circle of friends. It's more like just a couple of friends, not really a complete circle. But having people that you can talk to and be, you know, open with, and not have to worry about them judging you and those kind of things. So you could say what's on your mind and what you're feeling and express yourself, because I think a lot of times men just don't, are not expressive. And they, you know, there's a lot of pressure with being a man. And sometimes even in a household, it's not well understood. If a man is in the house and he's trying to be the man of the house, he's trying to be a provider and trying to take care of responsibilities, a lot of times you just have the weight of that on your shoulders. You don't want to let people down and you don't want to disappoint. But at the same time, it can be a lot sometimes. Sometimes it can be overwhelming for men. And so I found that having people that you can be open and honest with, transparent with, it helps to just say, man, this is what I'm feeling. It's a lot on me right now. The walls are closing in, and I need to, and like you said, going fishing, I fish a lot, and that really, really helps me a lot, just to relax and be out there and kind of, get away, escape from things for a little while, really helps. So I also want to talk about something that you mentioned earlier, the stigma that's attached to mental health, especially in the Black community, because we've been raised many times, and I say the Black community, but I'm sure that in other communities, men too are, Hispanic communities or just any community, pretty much. Men are taught to be strong, don't cry, don't show weakness, don't be soft, don't be emotional, all those kinds of things. But the reality is that we all, as men, have moments of each of those characteristics. And so when it comes to the stigma of mental health, men just hurt like anybody else does. And I guess I'm interested in hearing, especially since you've dealt with, people in the criminal system and the correctional system, let me say that, who've made choices. Some of it stems from mental health, some of it just stems from environmental, sociological type things. But they've made choices that have put them, into incarceration. And so, what do you say to our audience, either those who have been incarcerated or, are doing things that could get themselves incarcerated, and how mental health plays into that? What kind of advice would you have for them?
One of the advice is that you're absolutely right. I think men, we in society, and I think it's just a gender thing in general, just a man thing in general, right? I can't talk about my problems. I got this macho. I gotta appear tough. And even working in corrections, I saw that amongst, Black men, white men, Hispanic men. I saw that macho-ness. But I think when you provide that safe space for them to open up, it really is helpful, because a lot of times that we are keeping that macho-ness up because, one, we were raised that way, we were taught that way. Also, there has possibly been times when us have been, maybe growing up or maybe as an adult, when we have opened ourselves up as vulnerability to ask for help. And we didn't receive the help that we needed, or it was dismissed. So now I'm carrying this out without it. He ain't gonna help me. What are he gonna do? So I experienced that a lot, just in correction, that you have that macho-ness. And I had to explain in a lot of my classes that, hey man, look, as men, it's okay for us to talk about our feelings. It's okay for us to feel hurt. It's okay for us to feel sad. Right, you're going through grief and loss. You lost your son, you lost your wife, you lost your daughter, your mother, right? You're supposed to feel sad. That's a normal reaction, right? You're going to be angry. This is part of the grief and life loss process. So these feelings are okay to have. These are just natural feelings. But as Black men, right? We're speaking about Black men. We have been raised that way. Ah, man, toughen up. Don't talk about your feelings. Men don't talk about your feelings. If you cry, you a sissy, and all these other derogatory terms that was called to us back then that made us hold in our feelings even more, which created what anger over time. Depression possibly over time. We got all this regressive anger, and we up here fighting and beating up on everybody as we growing up because we never did have that outlet, or mental health was not normalized to us to talk about it. So one of the things that we have to continue to do now, which I'm starting to see a lot, even when I was in these correctional facilities, I had a lot of Black men that were on my caseload. They were really, really open to me about their situations, their experiences, how they felt about certain things, and providing that safe space for them to be like, hey, you know what? This is how I felt during these times. And when you hear their story, you're like, well, man, I can understand why he would want to keep this in, because these issues are really, really tough situation, and they're vulnerable. And for a man to say, hey man, I was sexually abused growing up by my uncle or by my dad, and now I have issues with my sexuality. Like, that's hard to come out and let go and express
Right.
that. And especially if you never did receive help and you wanted help before. So there's a lot of stigmas that comes into play as far as that. Again, thinking about distrust in the middle, just the distrust in the community as far as the health community. It's a lot of distrust there, a lot of stigma there. Some of it, a lot of it is warranted, based on, just not being properly treated when you do go into getting help. Being misdiagnosed is another thing. Going to people or going to facilities that's just, hey, you know what? Not understanding our culture, not understanding us being men, not understanding us being African men or women. We are diagnosed with schizophrenia more than other races because of them not understanding our culture, not understanding how we talk, things of that sort. I had experiences where women were being treated or diagnosed incorrectly because of certain things they would say, right? For example, we'll say, oh, I talked to God the other day. And it's like, oh, you talked to God? Oh, okay, he was hallucinating. Like, no, that's not, that's not a, we're not saying that we feel to talk and have a conversation back and forth and God said this, but this is how we talk. But if you're not around people who don't understand that culture, you'll get this, you'll be misdiagnosed. But it also in corrections, you saw a lot of people who came in that was not diagnosed and underdiagnosed. And you saw that a lot as well. A lot of men came in with mental health issues and didn't want to get help for it because of stigma, not wanting to talk about it because of the pain. The pain is hard. The pain is a tough thing to deal with.
Right. Yeah, there's so many things we could talk probably for hours about all of the issues that lead us, toward a mental health challenge, crisis, breakdown. Sometimes I think people have to realize that because you have a mental health challenge doesn't mean that you're mentally unstable. It just means that you are dealing with something that is causing you stress. And that provides a challenge, to be doesn't mean that, you're schizophrenic. If you have a mood one day and a different mood the next day, it doesn't mean, it's not necessarily the diagnosis. And sometimes, as you mentioned, Black people, I really dislike it when Black women are labeled as aggressive and, things like that, when that's not really the case. It's passion. And that passion is often misrepresented as aggression. Same thing happens to Black men. I've gotten it myself several times, where I say something or I look a certain way, and they'll, I'm a big guy, so they automatically attribute it to aggression, when in my mind there's nothing aggressive about it. I'm just being direct and speaking whatever I'm, feeling at the moment. So I'm saying all that to say that, I think to our audience, we could spend a lot of time talking about all the things, abandonment issues, and why we turn to drugs and sex and alcohol and other type of, vices to try to cope. But the reality is that we've got to seek help. We've got to allow professionals who have studied data and have looked at research and can tell from a, from an overview standpoint that these are things that people deal with and this is how you cope with it. These are coping mechanisms. And so, we're just about at the end of our session. It seems like it's gone so quickly. But I do want to ask, do you have social media or something that people can reach out to you if they have more specific questions or they'd like to perhaps set up a counseling session with you or get resources from you? How do they contact you?
Yes, you can look for me on LinkedIn. I'm at Daryl Barrett Jr. at LinkedIn. You can just type Daryl, Darrell Barrett, Barrett Jr. And LinkedIn. And also you can email me as well. I'm pretty open. It's going to be Daryl Barrett 80@gmail.com.
Okay. Well, folks, if you have watched this broadcast and perhaps you have more questions or you know someone who may be looking for some assistance, make sure you reach out to Daryl or feel free to reach out here to me at the Dadcast Podcast, and I'll definitely get his information over to you. I want to thank you, Daryl, for taking some time to speak with us, to be open about your challenges. We certainly wish you the best and want you to stay in full recovery, remission, good health, all of those things concerning you being a cancer survivor. And we wish you and your family the best as well. To our audience, I want to say thank you, Dadcast Nation. You've been great. It's been, this is our sixth season, 14 countries we span, and over 50,000 followers. And I'm just grateful that you guys tune in each and every week to hear from people like Mr. Barrett speaking on topics that are important to us. So thank you for tuning in today. I want to ask you to remember to like, love, and share this episode. Subscribe to us on our YouTube channel or through Instagram. You can also find us on Facebook, on X, formerly known as Twitter, and TikTok. And if you'd like to email us, you can do so to dadcastcomments@gmail.com. Again, it's dadcastcomments@gmail.com. Daryl's email is darylbarrett80@gmail.com. And Daryl, I'll give you, we've got about 4 minutes left. So I'll give you the last word, whatever your parting thoughts are before we sign off. Feel free to speak to our audience.
Yes, I appreciate you for having me. And I think this is something that should be continuously needed. Just to talk about Black men, mental health, and ways that we can, work towards getting better. I think this is something that we need to take seriously, especially as a culture, but also in our individual household as well. I think it needs to start at home. The more we be more open about it at home, I think what it does is to start killing those generational curses that we have about how we should be as men and how we should handle mental health in our household. So, I think this is a good topic for not only just for Black men, for Black women as well. This is something that we all need to sit down collectively and continue to talk about it and normalize mental health. And if you don't feel comfortable, unfortunately, this field is not, it doesn't really have a lot of Black men counselors in this field. I think that's some of the things that we need to start pressing more and pushing more of is having, more Black men psychiatrists, psychologists, mental health clinicians and counselors. so that Black men do feel comfortable and open up and be able to express themselves. But I would say this, you can go to psychology.com, look for therapists in your area, Black men therapists. But I'm gonna be honest with you, I've worked under a lot of Black female psychiatrists, colleges, and mental health counselors, and they're really, really great. So, don't be ashamed because your information is confidential. That stays within those counselors that you're speaking with, unless you break, unless they have to break confidentiality by you reporting certain things. Those guidelines are usually explained to you in the beginning, but this is your opportunity to get better. Women can help you just as much as a man can. So let's work on killing that stigma as well. So just because she's a Black woman don't mean she can't help you.
Absolutely. Appreciate you saying that. And again, thank you. Dadcast Nation, we'll be back with the next episode. Again, I want to thank you. As always, I'd like to say peace and blessings. I'm out.
Yeah, you talk to him. Shout out to Dadcast Nation. Yo, see, this is the perspective of a dad. Cast it to whomever's interested. Come take this ride with your boy, and I promise to keep it interesting. I'm invested in learning life's lessons so we can grow together. I know the weather be switching up on you, but listen up. It's just life's journeys. This would turn me into a teacher, a father, a husband, a preacher. And I'm trying to reach the top, a writer, an author, an actor, and a director. So when you see the world through my eyes, it's like a reflection of all of that. And I'm all of that, but it's much more to do. See, life is just your movie and your role is yours to choose. We only get one life to live, and I live my life with prayer. This the Dadcast Podcast, so hit that like and share. 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 Yeah, hit that like and share.